Welcome to the Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast with your own Desiana Torres. This is a place for humbled, open, and transparent conversations with members of our own community. Here you can find diverse testimonies of the oppression and trauma faced on both individual and community levels. Do you want to validate the suppressed emotions you've never had the opportunity to speak about? Interested in breaking the silence? Then let's validate all that you feel right here, right now on this podcast. Let's go. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. As you can see, we are outside of Safeway. My mama got a lot of grandkids in the house, so we needed to kind of come outside for a little bit. But we appreciate y'all so much for joining. Today we are going to be having a bunch of very vulnerable and deep conversations that are reflective of what life is like being a single mother. And so to have these conversations, I am deciding to share my mama's wisdom with y'all. This is someone that I hold dearly to my heart. The experiences that we have went through together are things that we know as a family, but not things that we have really advocated out to the world. And so this is a space where we can kind of come together and share that with you all, share that information, and to really just kind of teach people that it's okay that our life don't look how social media makes the world look. And the conversations we're going to have, they're going to be deep. Know that it's not always really going to be the easiest to talk about these things. So we appreciate y'all so much. I also want to apologize for any background noises that you might hear. I am connected to the Wi-Fi that's here, so if it's a little glitchy, please bear with us. We appreciate y'all so much. And please put in the comments, or please utilize the chat, as we will be taking time to respond to comments, and if there are any problems or issues, we can troubleshoot and things of that sense. And so to get started, I'm going to have the person sitting to my left kind of introduce herself a little bit.
Hello, everyone. So my name is Carmen. I'm Jesse's mom. All of them call me Mama Carmen. The only reason they give me Mama Carmen, it's because there's been many of Jesse and my kids' friends that have always included or seen me as a part of their mom giving advice or any just love, even if it was a simple hug. So my name.
And so we, like she said, my mom's the kind of person that always kind of took in the neighborhood kids, and like when she would cook dinner for everybody. It wasn't like just for us. We're very known in our community for like being the turn up house too. Like if there's a lot of kids who didn't really receive that affectionate love in their households, and they will come to our house and kind of receive that from us, which is why my mama got her nickname Mama Carmen. And so Mom Rocky says hi, Kumai.
Hi, Kumai.
So can y'all hear us okay? Please put thumbs up, or please utilize the chat again to make sure that y'all, if we need to speak up, because I know sometimes the background noise can be a little too high. And so I don't see no chats yet, but so Mom, I know we're gonna get started. Okay, we hear a thumbs up. So we're gonna get started with talking about what life has been like for you as a single mother, but more so, what sacrifices do you feel were a part of that? So I think what's important to talk about is how not only were you a single mother, but you was a single, and then you also had us as teenagers.
Yes.
And so my first question is, can you explain what the experience was for you to discover that you were pregnant with me at 17? How was the family's reaction? What kind of support or lack of support did you receive?
Was feeling nauseous. I knew something was wrong. I was 17 at the time, and I still remember I was with your dad at the moment, and we actually went to the store and got a pregnancy test, and it was late night, and it came back positive. And I went to my cousin's house, Geraldine, and I went to her house across the street, and I showed her. And she was the first encouragement that I had. But I was so scared. The household with my grandma being strong and my mom. And, you know, I was so scared. And so the only thing that I can think of was, how am I going to tell my tia Cope the news? Because I knew she was, you know, another mom to me. And she was very supportive. But once I was able to break the news with my mom simply was like, I don't want to hear anything from you. You just tell you know, your dad to come. I want to hear it from him. And he did. He came and spoke. And we had the support from my mom and my grandma. But as far as, you know, friends being in high school and some of the cousins, the first thing they said was to have an abortion, that you're throwing your life and you only did it to keep a man. And so I faced a lot of judgment, and I literally had to learn to disconnect from that, because it was never a part or in my mindset to have an abortion. I never even thought of it. I was wanting to do anything that I had to do to make sure I paid up to my responsibilities.
And I feel like a lot of the time, the pressures that we get from the people that we love, like, sometimes the words that they say are really impactful. Like, to sit there and say, like, you're only doing it for attention, or you're throwing your life away when you are creating life, it can sometimes be kind of scary to withhold. And then also a lot of pressure as a young mom to try to prove yourself. Did you find yourself as a mother in general having to try to prove or satisfy or maybe even convince the world that you had this and that you were good at it?
There was definitely a huge challenge that I had to prove, not to myself, but prove everyone else. When it came to my family, myself, definitely, but I had to prove even to schools, because going to school and being pregnant, I was told, even by school teachers and principals, they literally tried to kick me out of high school, Fremont High School, and they said that I was going to be a bad example. And I continued going to school, and as I got bigger, 7 months pregnant going to high school, there was 7 other girls pregnant at the same time, and the first thing they said was, you encouraged me to stay in school, because you were pregnant and we were pregnant, and they didn't know how to share it.
Yeah.
So it was a good thing.
True. And I know there's a lot of teen moms who kind of go through that experience of, like, having to try to figure out how you're going to balance, like, school life and your young life, and also taking on a new role that seems absolutely scary. And for me to be the oldest, I can only imagine, especially being pregnant now, how that would have looked if I were 17 and that lack of support that I would have received. And so the reason why I bring up a lot of the pressures of the world and society is sometimes a lot of the sacrifices that parents make come from trying to please how the world views us as mothers. And so I know that we're going to start talking about trauma. So I just want to give a heads up to everybody. Like, if you feel like it's overwhelming, please take a break. It's okay. This is going to be recorded. If you need to, like, take a deep breath, go get some water, go outside, please take care of yourself. Listen to your body, because that's really essential too. And something that I highly encourage is being able to utilize the journaling. Like, if you feel like something came up that maybe was a trigger for a trauma that you've experienced, take that time to journal and release those emotions, because we as a society, especially a lot of, like, the BIPOC community, which is, like, a lot of Black and brown folks, we have learned to suppress our emotions because not a lot of us are talking about the things that are essential for that. And so one of the questions that I have, since this is regarding your experience as a single mom, is, while you were in a relationship with the father of your children, which is my dad, what forms of trauma do you remember having to experience in your household?
It's a lot. After you were born, we got our first apartment. We're so happy we got a one bedroom. And I thought I had the happiest family already, because we were doing it right. We were, you know, being the parents that we needed to be. And then I got pregnant with your sister. So I'm pregnant and raising you. You were 6 months old when I got pregnant with you, Saida. And I never realized that I was going to face being a single parent, being in a relationship, because he was in and out of jail, coming home at 3 or 4 in the morning, not knowing where he was at, making sure my rent was being paid. And there was a lot of just activities that I wasn't ready for it to accept when it came to, like, you know, his past and, you know. So I was already a single mom being in a relationship, and it took me back to going back to school. I was pregnant with Isaida and Jesse, you know, being in a daycare, and I was still trying to get my high school diploma because I only needed, I think it was 11 credits. And it was hard. It was hard. So being able to have that experience that caused me to share, like, you know, be personal, transparent, like, hey, I need your help, I need your support, I need your help, you know, with the bills, and it was hard. It was hard because then I realized that I have to do this on my own. And, you know, having two kids, you can't just put your kids aside and say, hey, you know, wait until I graduate from high school. I literally had to make a choice, and that was, I'll always finish school later. I need to do what I have to do. And I did. There was times that after he said I was born too, after your sister was born, days later, he abandoned, he left to Arizona, and I had to be a single mom again. And so after that, I was like, I gotta do this on my own. And so it's like, I was so vulnerable that every time, you know, your dad would say, I'm sorry, I was always very forgiving. But then I didn't realize that he was just using it as a stepping stone just to get him by. So it was hard. I had to do a lot of sacrifices. And that's the reason why I made sure you guys finished school and traveled and did everything that you wanted to do, because I didn't get those opportunities. Mm-hmm. Now I'm starting to travel. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important that there's a lot of parents who can kind of relate to that too, like being in a relationship and having kids in that relationship and then still feeling like the single parent and being the person that's like the main caregiver and things of that sense. And so I remember that there were a lot of experiences that happened in our household that kind of traumatized the whole house environment. And what I also want us to talk about is how that can be related to generational trauma. So it's okay to say no, but are you willing to share what kind of experiences of love of your parents did you witness between the two that might have manifested or also occurred in your household that became normal?
One of the experiences was my parents divorced when I was 5. And so within the age of 4 and 5, which is the only memory I have, I only remember my dad coming home drunk and beating on my grandma or beating on my mom. And as my sisters might witness, my mom lived in a 2-story house. And I remember my dad tried to throw my mom out of a 2-story apartment building. And me and my sister would bite my dad's legs to stop and hit him and try to prevent him from throwing that. So watching that domestic violence and that abuse, growing up, I thought that it was a normal thing to be in a domestic violence relationship because I didn't know any better. Just, you know, watching it and from experience as a young child, you learn to accept it as a normal life.
And so I think that's really important. I think it's important for us to sit there for a little bit, that sometimes what we witness in our households growing up can then become normalized in our own mindsets, to that when we start experiencing that in our own relationships, in our own households, it then becomes not something where the world sometimes has this judgment of, why don't you just leave? Like, why do you stay? Why do you put yourself in that position? And standing from the outside looking in, I understand how that could probably seem like it's easy to just leave. But when you're involved in the inside of that household or those trauma experiences and domestic violence experience, what becomes important to validate is the emotional aspect that not a lot of us really take the time to process. Sometimes it's not easy for us to process what we're experiencing in the moment when we haven't even processed the trauma that has happened to us in our previous childhood and life experiences in that sense. And so, Mom, I know that you had the experiences of growing up witnessing domestic violence. And so when you and my dad were together, I know that that also occurred in our household. Can you kind of walk us through that experience of maybe what it was like to not only experience domestic violence, but also having it occur around your family and your children, something that she probably did not want us to see?
When it first started, where I was being, and it's being very transparent, my kids know, the moment that I started to witness that, I was being beaten, and I'm not saying just slapped, I'm not saying just being thrown to the other side, I'm talking about beaten as a man. I had broken nose, I had black eyes. When Jaylene, your youngest sister, was born, she was 3 days old, he beat me and put a telephone cord, you know, around my neck and told me, look at your babies because this is how you're gonna die. And I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. And it was that moment that my sister rushed. She knew something was wrong and she rushed. And she took your dad off of me. And that's the moment that I realized, if you don't get out of this permanently, you're gonna die. This man's gonna take your life. And it was, I think it was such a shock that you can love someone so much. Definitely. And want to save. You know, I never wanted to have my kids come in a broken home or in a single home at that, because I realized how much, you know, scars we had. We didn't have memories as far as family pictures with my dad as growing up. And so I never wanted you guys to go through that. But I realized that I was doing more damage trying to fix a family, and this was gonna take my life. Yeah. And it's hard. There's a lot of trauma. So knowing that you love someone so much, and your innocence of wanting to do everything as a wife, and it doesn't come that way, I felt like I lost myself so much that I didn't know who I was anymore. Mm. And it wasn't about me now. It was now about, what can I do to provide for my kids? And not just that, but the situation of being a single mom with four kids, the first thing you think of is, how am I going to take care of four kids? And I'm only making this little bit of money. And the only thing I knew, and you know, it's, I would always go in my room, cry it out, and pray. And that was the only thing I knew. And I'm so thankful that we overcame so much. Even with a little bit of money, I mean,
yeah, we made it.
Dollar Tree food. Thank you, Dollar Tree, because it was at that time, you know, that you're willing to sacrifice. When you finish some, when you finish trauma and you realize that you're facing death, you don't care. Mm-hmm. You don't care how much you have to work to be able to do what it takes.
No, I definitely agree to that. So just listening on the experiences that she shared so far, she had to sacrifice her education to be able to be a mother, right? And it was always in her head that I'm gonna go back to school, like I'll go back. And that could have potentially been the path that she could take if she had that support. Unfortunately, my father was not someone who was there emotionally and physically. I know that I'm not trying to paint him to be a horrible picture, because my father also has a life testimony of the reasons why he is where he is. There's grace around there, right? It doesn't excuse the actions, and it kind of encourages for accountability to occur so that we can heal and engage in these therapeutic and healing conversations. And so not only did my mom have to sacrifice her education, but she also had to sacrifice mainly her life to be able to provide to four kids by herself without a high school diploma, without any sense of direction, right? And so as a single mother, I remember us growing up, we were living with Sugar Mama for a little bit. My grandma, who was like our second caregiver, she was like our mom too. She would pick us up from school and she would drop us off in the morning, and while my mom had to rush to work. And it was always like that family support that I feel like is truly essential for, it's like the community comes together to help raise the kids, right? And I think that is what helped us survive so much. We also had a Tia Adriana, we had Tia Olguita, Tia Olga, like we had so much, and Tia Mary too, to help feed us or take care of us. My mother was out, you know, working two, you know, sometimes two jobs. There were times where
I had to work two jobs.
I feel like there was a sacrifice that we had took one time where, as a young, you know, as the oldest, like I was witnessing a lot of the stuff that my mom was going through. I may not have been able to process it all at the moment, but to me, it was like a normal life. Like this was just, I really strongly believe that everybody went through this struggle, until everybody else, you kind of see growing up that everybody has their two parents, and you're like, wait, your dad is in your life? Like it almost seemed like as if that was a luxury. Like, wow, that can really happen? Like what? Like, And so that also takes a toll on the emotional health of a child. But more so, I can only imagine the role of a parent when in your heart and in your soul, all you want to do is be able to provide your kids with everything that you wish you had growing up, right? And so I want us to kind of talk about your experiences as a single mother. I remember when we first got our first apartment on 66 and International. We lived in these orange apartments that are right across the street from Heaven's Court, right across the street from the Ville. And it was probably one of the best apartments I've ever lived in. And even though it was everything, when we moved in, we didn't even have furniture.
We only had one bed.
We had one bed, right?
Five of us sleeping in one bed.
Yes. And some of us were just so excited to like have our own rooms that we would like sleep in sleeping bags in our room, like just on the floor with no furniture, just like a bag of clothes, no hangers sometimes. And that's how we started off. And I feel like those life experiences really are something that we value and appreciate so much, because even though it's not the ideal situation that we would have wanted, it was something that humbled us so much to that everything that we have now, we embrace so much with like so much love. And like, we're not materialistic, like, at all. Like, people will buy me expensive stuff, and I'm like, you could have really went to Walmart and got me a bag. I still would have been happy with that, you know? And so there's a lot of, like, even though there's a lot of trauma experiences, there's also the good blessings and, like, the benefits that come from growing up in so much, I would say, in an environment that just had a turmoil. It wasn't like it was bad all the time, because we did have some support. Yes, we did have that love from each other. I remember that as a single mother, I used to help you. I became the caretaker once, you know,
my stronghold,
once you and my dad, you know, were officially done. I was like the go-to. Desi, I need you to do this. Desi, I need you to do that. It was always like I was taken upon that position to help. At 9 years old, I know how to cook. I knew how to clean. I knew how to change diapers, take the kids baths, have a routine set, help with my homework. When we were like on summer school and my mom had to go to work, sometimes we didn't have a caregiver. I was the caregiver in the household, you know? And I was the one who would be a person to be like, we're gonna have summer school with the kids. And I used to like work on ABCs, send the kids to detention, like all this stuff, because they wouldn't listen. You know, you're not my mama. Like, that's what I used to get all the time. And so there was some other life experiences that we had in our household where sometimes we didn't always have money to eat.
I think one of the things that you guys shared was when you did your video with Isaida, your sister, was lunch money. Mm-hmm. And I grew up the same. I didn't have lunch money. So it really hit hard. And it wasn't that the parents didn't care. It's just the fact that they didn't. My mom gave us the best she could, and that was at home. She made sure we had food at home. She just didn't have anything else. But she was the biggest role model in my life, because she taught me just love your kids, even if you don't have. Just hug them, go to sleep with them, and show them the love. And that was the biggest wisdom that anyone can give. And that was the best thing I can give you guys, is love the heck out of you guys, even if I didn't have, and sharing that I didn't. And I know that, remember the sacrifices I made to get every year season passes to go to Six Flags. And I didn't have to worry about any finances or anything, as long as we made our sandwiches and our Capri Suns and our Kool-Aid, you know, you saved us. But we would just go every weekend, Six Flags, and it never got paid out.
No, it was one of those experiences that we were always looking forward to go somewhere as a family. And I remember, like, even growing up in the household, I remember there were times where my mom, the church would know that we were struggling a lot financially. And there'd be times where they would also give us opportunities. There was it Tanisha who would offer us to go to her house and clean?
Oh, yeah. And Sister Denise.
Yeah, that's who it was. And Sister Denise allowed for us to, there were like people who would allow for us to come into their homes and clean. And they would pay us like $100 or something to do it. But that money was a lot to us.
It was
like,
so
that
much
was like,
for
that's
us.
Groceries, that's PG&E, like that's something.
Everything, yeah.
And so there was a lot of experiences and sacrifices that we had to make as a family to be able to meet each other halfway. And I think what was hard is my mom, there were times where my mom could not explain why we couldn't have certain things. And especially being young kids, and we want to have the things that there were. I remember going to middle school, and there were kids who had Jordans and Nikes and all this stuff. And my mama sent me to sixth grade in some light up Payless shoes, okay? Like, and some overalls. Like,
and that's how I grew up.
Yeah. And if you know school, you know sometimes there's an age limit where them light up shoes gotta go. But we couldn't afford, you know, the shoes and the clothing and stuff like that. And so at that age, I believe that I was really like, oh, I hate my life. Like, I hate that we don't have money. I hate that we don't have this. I hate that this. And I hate, it was just so much just lack of understanding for myself, especially at that age. It's hard to understand why we don't have the things that we see the rest of the world having. And sometimes I could tell it was hard for my mom to explain that to us. Sometimes she's like, I just don't have it. You know, I just can't. But what my mom would hide is how that made her feel to not be able to provide what her kids wanted all the time, you know? And so how did that make you feel as a mother to go through wanting to give your kids everything and as a single parent being limited to how much you could give?
I think that's one of the things that you wrote in your book. Mm-hmm. And we was talking about it this morning about expectations. Like, mm-hmm. you know, my family had so much expectations of me, you know, as a daughter, as a sister, or as a cousin, my job, you know, as a worker. And it's like, how does everyone expect so much from one person?
Yeah.
And I remember laying you guys to sleep. You guys went to sleep. And it was midnight, and I went outside, and I took a whole bottle of ibuprofen. I was ready to commit suicide. And I remember being outside crying, and I was praying because that's all I knew is just to pray. But I was so depressed, and it was such a challenge to try to prove to everybody, people pleasing. And I took a bottle of ibuprofen without realizing who was going to take care of my kids. And you came out. And you said, the first thing you said was, because I was crying, Mom, you're praying. Are you talking to God? And I looked at you and I said, yes, I am. Without her realizing that I was ready to just die, I just took a whole bottle of ibuprofen. And I figured by the time they find me, they're not going to see anything on the outside without realizing the damage on the inside. And when you hugged me and you said, Mom, it's okay, God's going to help us. And I cried and I said, God, please don't let this work. And I promised you that I would do whatever it takes to take care of my family. And I did. I did everything to do the best that I can without any complaints. And then I learned to not please people. I realized that I just needed to be the best that I can be for my kids only, because that's the only thing I can do. I had to learn not to please people.
I remember talking about
allergies. It's sprinkling over here, huh?
Y'all, we laugh at our trauma, okay? Just don't mind us with that. But it doesn't mean, it doesn't take away from the seriousness of the conversation. It's just, it makes it feel a little lighter, you know. Intuition is a real thing, especially a woman's and a young girl's intuition. Again, we apologize for the background noise, but it was like late at night. It was, what time would you say it was?
It was after midnight.
It was after midnight. I'm never one who's like up at that time either. And so I think something in my soul told me, like, go check on your mama. And so, woo. When I went to the car, I didn't, you know, you can't tell the pain and the stress and everything that a parent, especially a single parent, withholds within themselves that prevents them from being able to just have a safe space to release it and talk about it. Especially because we don't want our kids to, we don't want them to worry. We don't want them to stress. We in a sense take up all that responsibility to be like, we got it, it's okay, like we gonna figure it out. But my mom was right. There was a lot of pressure that she had, not only from herself, but from the rest of the world that kind of expected so much from her. Like, you chose the man you were with, you chose the man you had kids with, so kind of like lay with that, you know? And that's so unfair to the experiences that a lot of us go through, because life ain't perfect, you know what I mean? There's so many of us who silently go through these experiences that it's kind of hard for us to be able to explain it out loud, or to it almost feels like we're failures if we say it out loud.
That's exactly what it feels like. You fail, and you're never good enough. You can never see the goodness in yourself or what you're doing, because, you know, we're in a world right now that people are so needy, but it's not a need like for help. It's a needy like, give me, and that's all I care about, as long as I get to where I need, you know? And that's That can tear someone else. That's literally giving as a vulnerable being person, you know? Because you expect, you know, my mom always taught us, when you give to others, others will give back to you when it's time. And that never happened. And so it's hard.
Definitely hard. And so I know a lot of us can kind of understand that. Not even if we're not single parents, just the pressure to be so perfect all the time and to exceed every expectation that we have. It's unrealistic, and it's also honestly really harmful to our own mental health and to a lot of the stuff that we carry inside. And so that's when my mom didn't tell me at that moment that that's what happened. Like, I had no idea. I'm still like, you praying to God? Like, something that my family really did have was like trying to withhold faith. We had nothing else. We didn't have no money. We didn't have the support that you know, the father in the household. We lacked a lot. There were times where my mom would be like, y'all want groceries this month or PG&E? And that's not like the typical, you want some Nikes, some Jordans, you want this or that. That's not the two options that you would kind of want to provide to your kids to be able to be like, which one is more important. And I remember my mom telling us, you know, be careful, because if we get food and don't pay PG&E, we can't use the fridge.
And that's what happened.
Like, there were times when we had the ice chest to kind of like preserve our milk and foods and stuff in that sense. And so there was a lot of struggles that I've watched my mother with take, which makes sense to that moment that I wrote about in my book. I believe I call it Mother's Sacrifice, or Parent Sacrifice, or Single Parent Sacrifice. I think that's the title of the poem in the book. That talks about that experience, because you start to learn the weight that's so heavy for so many of us to carry, silently carry. And that's why it's important for us to come together and just share about it, even if it's not in the public. I know we're doing it publicly because we want to help other families be able to utilize the experiences that we're going through, to see what it looks like to just sit down and have a conversation with your mom about their life experiences. And so there were other sacrifices that I felt I've watched you make, and a lot of that was even dating.
Yeah, that was hard. So
can you explain a little bit of what it's like to even date while you're a single parent, or to even, I mean, single parent with four kids?
It's hard.
I feel like a lot of people would just have this stereotype that, nah, that's too much.
I think one of the things from me dating, it took me 4 years after the divorce to even date someone. And I was traumatized. I was so traumatized to even date, scared. My guards were super high. My expectations were super high. And I met someone that literally respected me and showed me and was sensitive in that area. And even as we dated within years, the fact that my guards were still high. And this person literally said, look, I know you have kids. I never presented you guys to him or him to you, because I was making sure I kept that away from the house. And this person showed up at 8 a.m, remember, with bags of groceries? And he was like, look, if I'm going to be with you, I'm going to be with you and your family. And that right there was like, you're willing to accept my kids. Because I've always heard from your dad that no one would ever love you with your kids. And that was kind of trauma. And it's hard. But long story short, it was hard. It was hard because it wasn't that this person judge me for it, you guys. It's the fact that his parents judged me. That my son is never going to marry anyone that has kids. Mm-hmm. And without them even knowing that, I walked away. Mm-hmm. I walked away, and it's like, wow. But there was other relationships, too, that actually were not healthy. And when you're so broken and you become so used to being single for so long that even when you try to love someone, there's always someone that you know in your circle that's always saying, this person's not good enough. So you just give up. Mm-hmm. And you give up to the point where it's like, I don't even want to date anymore. Yeah. I don't want to date anymore because I'm never going to find someone good enough because people expect me to have the best. But it's like, how can you expect anyone to love you when they're broken too, you know? And it's like, it's not about seeing the brokenness. It's you see me because that's how my mom raised me. My mom always said, find the good in someone, or, you know, love someone. Or if your enemy, like she shared that one time, if your dad ever comes to your house at 4 a.m, you feed him. And I was like, oh no, mom, I'm not gonna feed their dad. I'm gonna lock the doors. And sure enough, that happened. He came at 4 a.m. I gave him a plate of food, not realizing that, wow, my mom showed me literally how to learn to forgive. And ever since that, I was like, I need to learn to forgive, because I didn't know how to forgive. I was so bitter.
Yeah. And there was a lot of life lessons that my mom had kind of shared with me too in the process, because I became a very angry and bitter child. Like, I know right now y'all probably like, oh, Desi's so cool, she's so this. Nah, this is not like this. It took some growth, okay? It took some healing and some growth to get to where I am today, because where I was before was a young girl who was carrying a lot of pain and trauma and suppressed emotions, because it was still hard at that time for our family to really talk about it. Because as you see, my mom withheld a lot of that. She was not really vocal about it. We could see it. And then that's something that I'm trying to highlight a lot, is that as family could literally witness trauma together. We would be in the same household seeing everything that's going on. But a lot of us decide to stay quiet about it. And a lot of us decide, in the protection, I don't think parents do it intentionally to harm the children. But in our sense, we're like, we're just protecting them from the reality of the world. And something that my mom was highlighting is, like, she got to a point where she started to understand that it was important to have these uncomfortable conversations with us, right? It was a time for her where she was like, all right, let's sit down, let's talk about it, you know? And it doesn't mean that she was ready to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. She wasn't. I feel like to this day, she's still not ready to have these conversations, because again, they bring out so much emotion that we try to keep under the rug in our families for many generations. And so there was a moment where my mom began to develop OCD, right? And OCD is something that I'm learning, especially like going to learn about trauma and all this stuff, is like OCD can come as a trauma response to a lot that we have gone through. Sometimes it's a lack of control that we have over our lives, so we try to control our environment a little bit. So my mom always had us up every Saturday morning.
Seven in the morning.
With, y'all remember them ice cream tub buckets that our families like to recycle with different stuff? Yeah, we had soap and water in that, a toothbrush and a sponge. And we would go around wiping walls, wiping the stair. Like, it was just this routine thing that everything had to be perfect. And it wasn't my mom necessarily, because people are like, damn, your mama's strict. But what for her, people would come over and be like, damn, you got 4 kids in your house, is this clean? That was something that made my mom feel like she was accomplished in the world. But I remember, even though we built the skills to know how to clean, people who know us are like, yeah, y'all hella clean. Like, y'all houses are always spotless. At the same time, what it really does is like, or at least at that moment for my mom, what she started to notice is that it was kind of impacting her kids a lot. My mom would be like, you can't go outside until this house is spotless. You can't do this. You can't do that. And sometimes we clean the house at 7 p.m. and all the kids are inside the house now. And we used to be like, mom, we can't go outside. And so, can you talk about the moment? Somebody said a toothbrush. Yes, a toothbrush. Okay, because there are small spaces that sponge just don't fit in between. And that toothbrush do. So, these are real life experiences. And so, Shorty said she would have taken the whooping. No, you wouldn't have.
No, you wouldn't.
Trust me, my mama's whoopings was not the ones you would want to take. You would take that toothbrush and scrub the floors. Somebody's also saying, this is so helpful, thank you for the real conversation. We appreciate y'all so much for participating in the chat.
And there was a reason for that because, you know, growing up with four kids, people are looking and they're so judgmental, even though
super judgmental.
They don't say words, but there was a comment that was brought up to me, and they said that your house is always going to be dirty because you have four kids.
Yeah.
And so I made sure that everything was spotless.
Yeah.
Without sharing to my kids, because I didn't share this. Mm-hmm. I recently just shared it recently, a couple of days ago, but I shared the reason why I made sure they were cleaning and made sure that everything was spotless was because people were looking for failure.
Yeah.
They were looking to see what can they bring up or what can they use to talk about us.
Yeah.
And so I made sure
that they had nothing
mm-hmm. to say. They couldn't say anything. And then trying to balance two jobs, a clean house, and making sure my kids were taken care of. It was a lot. I wouldn't go to sleep till 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. And I think one of the hardest parts is like having to do all this stuff, and still show up being a mother every single day. Because something that I'm learning and something that I teach with a lot of kids that I provide life coaching to is we have so many roles when we're born, right? We have the daughter. First you're born somebody's daughter. Then you got the sisters if they're siblings. And then we go to school, we're a student. And then we pick up work, we're an employee. There's so much stuff for this. And then sometimes what it does is it prevents us from having the opportunity to connect to ourselves as an individual. And I try to remind people, you are Carmen first before you are Mama Carmen. Before you were an employee at this job, before you're this. And also, like, for us too, I'm Desiana first before I am a daughter, a sister, a girlfriend, a mother, a this, a that. Like, there's so many roles that we take on that sometimes when we neglect ourselves, it prevents us from showing up in our other roles the ways that we would like to. And so because of that, there was a moment where you had a breakthrough. Because my mom was the type of mama, she didn't play. The whole house could be spotless. We lived in an apartment above the garage, where the garage opened, you could hear it. And when it was a certain time frame, we knew it was my mama. And if we didn't have the chicken out, we didn't have the house clean, we was all panicking, rushing around the house like hecka fast just to get everything perfect. But there are times where the whole house would be clean to what we thought were her expectations. She'd come home. Mind you, my siblings are still younger. Chichi and Jay were probably like, four or five years old. So if you got kids, you know these, you cannot keep a house clean when you got kids that age. You can't. There'd be times that they throw a pillow on the floor or something. My mom came home one day, looked at that pillow, and she lost it. And I was like, Mama, the sink is clean. Look, the toothbrush is there. I did the toothbrush thing. Like, but the pillow was on the floor, and she just lost it. And I don't think it was a sense of, like, being angry that a pillow was on the floor. I think it was just a release of all the everything that she held built up inside of her. And what was the moment for you where you tried to break out of that? Because I remember you had us do something.
Yeah, there was a moment where after you shared that with the pillow, it was literally a pillow. The apartment was spotless. That was a red flag. The moment that I shared that in anger and went in my room, and I just got so self-convicted. And it's like, this needs to stop. I cannot bring abuse to my kids as they're being abused, you know, with the abuse that I experienced. And I literally went in my room and I started praying. And I said, God, I really need you to take this away from me. I don't want to have this cleaning disorder anymore. Because it was hard to try to prove to everybody, make sure that the place was clean, because I never knew who was going to come by and visit.
Yeah.
And so it had to be clean all the time. And so literally I was like, I can't do this. It takes a lot of energy to do that. And the next day, you guys went to school. I picked you guys up and I said, put all your backpacks in the living room and go upstairs. And it was like, no, you're going to use it. And
like, you're
going to yell at us. And I was like, no, just leave your backpacks
and
on the living room
too.
Floor.
And our shoes.
And your shoes. And go upstairs. And the reason I did that was because I felt so convicted the day before. And literally, that's when I literally faced my breakthrough. That it was okay to have a mess and be okay with it. And ever since that, I mean, you can see my...
Yeah, she with her grandkids, y'all. I walk in the house and I'm like, The devil's a lie. I could not, as a child, have walked into this house and seen all these toys on the floor like this. Like, I did not have that childhood. I didn't have this privilege. But I think it shows the growth. Of us can see a lot of our grandparents or our mothers as grandmothers and our fathers as grandpas doing everything that we like. How come you couldn't do that for us? Like, it takes a level of growth. It takes a level of healing. It takes a level of processing, like, what we didn't do right. Because remember, being a parent is not, there's no manual for that.
It's not.
There's no, okay, page one, when your kid is this age, this is, no, because everyone, life experiences are different. Everybody's perspective is different. And I think sometimes we try to hold ourselves to the standard of what being a parent is supposed to look like, how it's supposed to feel, how it's supposed to be successful. And in reality, it's based upon what y'all going through. Some parents got both parents in the household and it still ain't right. Right? We're not saying that all the times you need both parents. Sometimes it's just, actually, I'm not gonna answer this. I'm gonna let you answer that. Because I feel like that's important from a parent perspective. What do you feel has allowed for you to show up so much for your kids? Like, what is the parent advice that you would give to all parents to connect with their kids or to process trauma? I mean, any kind of life advice you have.
I think the only advice, and I get this all the time, is how did you do it to have your kids be where they are? Because they see the respect they have for me. And they see the responsibilities, like, they turned out, like, they're so loving. And it was the advice that, and the example that my mom shared with me was, just love your kids, regardless of what. Let everything fall apart. And I was just sharing with you this morning, you know, Desi would go in college and go to the clubs. And I would sit there and cry and I'd be like, why was I that example to my daughter? Like, why was I at the club? You know, because I never wanted her to be in the club. But then I had to go and just not bring that, you know, whatever my kids did in life, my responsibility as a matured, more wise mother was not to argue about what they're doing wrong, because the world is going to do that already. I needed to love my kids regardless of what choices they were making in love, and go to my room and just pray and pray that they get protected, that they ever, you know, it doesn't, that one day they'll grow out of it. And if Desi goes to that club, make her be so tired that she gets to go home. And it
make
was
her
happening.
Be hurt, you know? Make her be hurt.
Make her. But my thing was not to let, you have to make, I had to learn to become, and I hear a lot of parents say this, I'm sorry. And it's nothing against anyone that does or have that mindset, but it worked for me, was the moment that I prayed and I knew that I didn't have to tell my kids I was their mom every single day.
Because I'm your mom. Because I said so.
Yeah. And what I didn't share or do in my walk as a mom was I didn't become their best friend. I didn't make, and the reason I say best friend was because best friends, they listen. And parents are always giving advice. So I got the parent part right, but I didn't get the best friend part right. And I needed to learn to listen more and not say anything. And the moment I started to listen to them, I realized, like, wow, they were actually teaching me some stuff that I didn't have any wisdom in. And as my kids started to grow up and they would call me in the middle of the nights and be like, Mom, this happened. And I was like, it's okay, mija, let's pray. And, you know, they expected, you know, maybe some correction, or they expected me to say, I told you so, and that wasn't going to come out. And instead, I started to support them right where they were and love them right where they were. And I always tell my kids, don't stop learning to love. Yeah. Whatever you do, love the heck out of people, even those that go against you, love the heck out of them. And one day you would see those fruits come out.
Yeah.
And that was the only thing I can
give
the advice, is love your kids even when they make mistakes, because words, they hurt so much more than if you're gonna give your kids advice, talk to them, step down, get on your knees and get into that eye to eye level. And don't make it seem like you're the only one that can give or give advice or speak, because they trust me, you will learn so much from your kids
just by listening to them.
And if they're ever disobedient, then that should be red flags that they're hurting secretly. And take the time to be able to find out why they're hurting.
That's deep. Because I wasn't the easiest. I read a comment. I can't remember who said it, but somebody was like, you look so mean at Fruitvale Elementary. Look, I have the, what is it, resting, you know, RBF. And I did carry a lot. Sometimes it just showed out that way. But in reality, I was just hurting inside. My mom, I witnessed a lot of her growing up and a lot of the stuff that she had experienced and a lot of stuff that I experienced, I internalized. And there was a point, this is like before we actually start talking about it as a family, where we were able to kind of help me process those emotions and come back into tune to be able to understand why I felt the way I felt. Because even if somebody was to ask me, like, I had this one teacher who was my math teacher and he was my soccer coach. And sometimes we have just a teacher who prevents, or, I mean, allows himself to fulfill that father role, you know? And so my coach would call me out of class every time I had an attitude. And I also had this teacher who was my mom's teacher back in school. So he had no trouble calling my mom.
Mr. Lee.
Like, he would call my mom every time I had an attitude in class. Call my mama. I don't care. You know, we try to be tough and stuff. But there was this role of where my mom started to understand that my emotions and my attitude and my anger was coming from a much deeper place mm-hmm. than just what we saw. Because so much we see the disobedient child and we're so quick to just discipline and intimidate and create fear. And because I said so, because I'm your parent, that sometimes it creates a distance between us to be able to connect emotionally. And something I remember, I think Shorty had put in here, which was so funny. She said, Shorty's somebody that I met at college and we're like really good friends now. She said, we were at the clubs until she started telling us she'd rather stay home to journal to God. And she said that, she said, okay, that's never been a response to any of my college friends. That's so true. She's talking about experience where I was going through a breakup, a real hard breakup. And all my friends are trying to get me to the club. They're like, Desi, come to the club. Like, we gonna forget about it. We gonna this. And I'm like, nah, I gotta sit with this. I gotta sit with these emotions. I gotta process it. I gotta heal. And I don't wanna put myself in that. And that was such a mature response for me, especially at that level where there's so many distractions for me to go back into the world and just fall into the temptations of the world. And that came from what my mom taught me at home. Because even though there were some things that we didn't talk about, I remember watching my mom being up late at night in her journal and just in her room. And I used to peek. She had two doors that opened up, but it had like a little gap. So I used to always peek in there, you know, to see what she was doing. And she would sit either at the edge of her bed or on her knees. And she would just write in her journal. She'd be crying and releasing it all. And then she'd come out and be so happy. And I'm like, the hell just happened in there? Because I need that. I started to see the change and the impact it had over my mom's life to be able to go and release these things that she held deep down inside. And what helped me so much is my mom saw that I was so interested in journaling that I remember her buying me a journal. And I was like, I'm not going to write in there because you're going to read it. You're going to judge me. You're going to beat my ass if I say something in here, if I release the truth. Like, I just didn't feel safe to do it. And she told me, I would not read what you write in here. This is for you. Release, you know, talk about whatever you want and allow for yourself to just kind of process what you're going through. Now, that journal really helped me because at such a young age, I have like, what, 6 full journals now?
Yeah.
And, it allowed for, that was my therapy. We didn't have access to therapy. We didn't have access to going to a therapist and talking to somebody. Like, we couldn't even know. Yeah, that therapy it was not something that we had access to. And so the journaling was something that you taught me that really helped restore my life. It helped me process, it helped me release. But it was more of the safety of having the journal. Yeah. Because there's a lot of kids that I provide life coaching to now where they're like, I don't want to write in a journal because if my mom sees this, like, I can't be safe. That's basically what they're saying. I don't feel safe to release these things. I don't feel safe to process this in my journal. I don't feel safe to even have this existing somewhere. And that's such a real experience. And so I want to encourage a lot of parents or even a lot of children, even if you have children yourself, like, just create that safe space for yourself if you don't have it. And also, if you have children, create that safe space for your children. Because I wouldn't be able to call my mom at 4 a.m. Mom, I just got in a fight in the club. Or mom, this just happened in my relationship. Or mom, this is what's, it was real. Like the way we talk to each other, you would think we're only friends. You'd be like, that's your mama? Yeah, that's my mom. Because she gonna tell me like it is. She gonna keep it real with me. But what allowed for me to really help pass wisdom to other people is the journaling. There's so many people that I have. Like somebody says, Shorty says she bought me a journal and I'm 3 journals in. See, so I really highly encourage that, even for parents, to not just for your children, but for us as individuals, to process our own traumas and our own emotions that may have come from our childhood that are still sitting in there. Something that I said yesterday at the birthday party to a family that we were talking to is like, so many generations, imagine just a carpet, you know what I mean? Like that little Aladdin, that little magic carpet, you know, that just magically goes to generation to generation to generation. Imagine our families continuously teaching us to just dust it under the rug. Mm-hmm. Hide what you got under the rug. Kick it under the rug. We lift
it
up.
To the grave.
We put it under there. That's the trauma. We put the insecurities. We put the mental health issues. We put everything that don't project what we are trying to showcase in the world. We put that under the carpet. Then when we lay that carpet down, we walk through, walking forward, because the world keeps telling us, just keep moving forward. Just keep moving forward, right? What we're not realizing is that we are putting so many stepping stones and bumps under that rug that the next generation of kids is going to come and trip over that because we're not dealing with it. So how about we as a society, we as a family, we as just individuals begin to start lifting up that rug and start dusting out little by little the stuff that we've been hiding in our families. Because what's the one thing that I've been noticing, and you kind of hear, like, we were getting a lot of feedback we had three parties yesterday. At the quinceañera we went to.
Two quinceañeras.
Yeah, one was a sweet 16, one was a quinceañera. And a lot of family members were coming up to us and they're like, yo, like, I appreciate your IG lives because you're really talking about the stuff that none of us talk about. I didn't know y'all were going through this too at the same time that we was going through it. Because remember, from the outside looking in, you can't see what we got going on because everything under that carpet. But what's so real for us is to be able to process all those emotions and the traumas together. And you can see it's not easy. We gonna cry.
And it's okay to cry. I think being able to be vulnerable and, you know, you get tired being strong. Yeah. And when you learn how to cry, and that's a big tool. But when you actually learn to say, it's okay to cry because I respect my emotions, I respect myself, you realize that you're letting go of a lot of the trauma too. And at the same time, one of the biggest things to do is learn to forgive. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and they're, you know, when you see someone hurting people hurt people.
Yeah.
I've always said that. And a lot of times, you know, they can have that lifestyle that it's okay for them to hurt people. But then, like I said, find the goal, find the reason why they're hurting, or what's their reason for the red flags and the traumas. But
yeah.
When you learn to forgive people, and I share this, when you're able to learn to, you know, speak about someone and not say, like, you know, titles or my ex or, you know, my baby daddy, or, and you learn to call those people by their names. Then you realize, like, wow, I literally learned to forget finally and let go. And my mom always said, this woman would challenge me. She made sure I didn't have any enemies mm-hmm. within myself.
Mm.
People can hate you, but you make sure your heart is clean.
Sure,
don't you dare have any enemies. And that was hard.
It is hard. Especially with all that we go through in life, it's so hard to keep our heart so pure when it's like, damn, sometimes, you know, I'm giving so much good to the world and I just keep receiving all negative. And I get it. We get it. We're not saying that none of the stuff we're advising to all of you all is easy. Because if it was easy, everybody would do it. It's hard and it's uncomfortable, but we are trying to challenge everyone to feel comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's where we grow the most, right? Tupac, who is my favorite, like, I just look up to him so much. He talks about the concrete growing from the rose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the concrete growing from the rose. The rose growing from the concrete. And that explains a lot of our life situations. Sometimes we're not growing in environments that were meant for us to succeed in, meant for us to grow in, meant for us to just continue to have all this access, when you could literally, from the concrete, you could see the grass bed on the other side and all them healthy roses growing, right? But there are sometimes that we are living in these times where we are the ones who break that. And we're the ones who are pushing to create a better generation. Not sometimes that we won't even be able to experience, but that our kids and their kids and their kids and their, allowing for the next cycles and the next generations to be broken so that they can begin to manifest a life that's full of healing and love and all these opportunities that sometimes we wish we had access to. And so I know it is 1:00. I do want to appreciate y'all so much for staying in tune with our IG lives. Next week we are going to be talking about breaking the silence. It's going to be our story, our voice, our power, and this is going to be hosted, I believe he's still on here, Johnny Hines. And it's going to be a male perspective. We have two women. We're trying to make it diverse too, so we're going to have the male perspective next week to allow for us to start talking about how trauma is experienced from the male side, because there's two different sides that we process. The world don't really let men experience emotion, and I feel like that's such a barrier to a lot of men in our world. And so stay tuned, please watch with your men next week, your fathers, your baby daddies, like the ones who need to hear it, right? Allow for us to please be able to come together and learn that when we heal ourselves, we heal our hood, right? And so we appreciate y'all so much. And together, I want us to take a couple deep breaths, because that was a lot, right? That was. So breathe with me. We're going to breathe in. Come on, everybody. Sit up straight. I can't do it.
Labor.
We're going to practice these labor breathing techniques, okay? So breathe with me. So when we breathe in, we're going to breathe in some love. Ready? Breathe in. Hold it. Breathe out that self-hatred. We're going to breathe in peace this time. 1, 2, 3. Breathe in. Hold it. Breathe out that stress we carry. One more deep breath. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Breathe in. Hold it. Breathe out. Thank y'all so much again for y'all love, y'all support, y'all continuously showing up for us. It's been consistent in the chats. We thank y'all so much. And remember, we don't have all the answers to the world. We just sharing based on what we go through. And we hope that you all can begin to take this back at home, because that's where the change makes. It's like when y'all come to church, you don't just come on Sunday and learn the word and just go home, right? You come, you take it, and you apply it to your home life so that we can be able to heal and grow together. So we appreciate y'all. We love y'all. Much love, much support, and above all, much peace to everybody. We'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.